I'm your inner dream monologue, and you're fast asleep, so I'll be quick. Great job using the Colgate Optic White Overnight Teeth Whitening Pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
At Outback Steakhouse, your wish is our command. Backed by popular demand, steak and lobster at a special price starting at $19.99. Come enjoy our bold center-cut sirloin seasoned with our signature blend of 17 spices and paired with a buttery, succulent lobster tail. Hurry into Outback Steakhouse where your steak and lobster wishes come true at a price you can't miss. Steak and lobster, starting at $19.99. No rules, just right.
Hey, this is Jay Baer from Convince and Convert, author of the new book, Hug Your Haters. And one of the best ways to get your hands on this book and to see me speak is to register right now for Social Brand Forum 2016. Join me, Jenny Diedrich, Joe Palizzi, and more in Iowa City this fall. Register now at socialbrandforum.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Today's guest is John Zissimos. John is the Chief Creative Officer at Salesforce. As CCO, John is responsible for building the Salesforce brand and crafting the company's story around the world. He leads the creative organization across digital, strategy, interactive design, films, events, customer stories, and UX. Over the past 6 years, John has inspired a design-led culture and built a full-service creative agency within Salesforce to inspire, innovate, and tell the story of the fastest-growing software company in the world. Prior to joining Salesforce in 2010, John spent over 2 decades as an advertising creative executive, film director, and photographer. John began his career in marketing at Chiat Day and has held top creative leadership positions at McCann Erickson and J. Walter Thompson. John holds a Bachelor of Arts in Radio, Television, and Film from Temple University. He lives in the San Francisco Bay Area with his wife, Pam, and daughters, Alexandra, Ellie, and Katie. John, welcome to On Brand.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you lead an enormous creative effort inside an enormous software company. I can't even imagine what your days as a brand builder even look like.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't always this big, and it wasn't always this way. But one of the amazing things is watching the growth from coming in years ago and seeing this startup that caught fire. And just coming in at the absolute perfect moment for both me personally and for the company, and then having this vision that I've had in my head for almost a decade to build this kind of internal agency, creative digital department, and customer experience department inside of a company, and watch that flourish. And it could have easily failed within the first 6 months or the first year. But to grow and watch that happen over the last 6 years has been really not only the challenge of a lifetime for me and my career, but also one of the most, if not the most rewarding things that's ever happened to me other than my children. And so it's been just fantastic to be here and build this, but has not been easy, and it wasn't always this big.
Well, it's interesting too, because you say that and you kind of walk back through that period of time, and I, probably a little further back than that, was in a corporate marketing job and was a Salesforce user, and I kind of remember the company and the interface and the brand very differently. And as you saying, it's wasn't always this big. How has that brand evolution happened? Because, I remember the brand looking and feeling very differently. I mean, still in line with the brand today, but it was different. And also in that time, me coming up through the marketing side of things and the digital side of things, I've seen companies like Radian6 become part of the fold. And how does that How does that brand evolution that encompasses whole other companies and other brands, how has that all come to pass as well?
I think at the heart of everything that's happening here, you know, at the heart of any company, a brand is a promise. And you can, and you have to reduce down to what is that promise? And usually that's three-dimensional. There's the promise of the actual products and things that you create. There's the promise of the people behind that. There's the promise of the future and the trajectory of the vision of the company set by the CEO into the future. And I think that, you know, as you're building a brand, the company's also building. And when all those things unite, so you're making acquisitions or you're building new products or you're having innovation, and all of those should wrap back into the core, the center of your brand promise. And, you know, I always kind of talk about this, is that everything we do wraps around this one thing, that we help create deeper, more meaningful relationships for our customers. So everything you touch, you feel, anything that you can buy from Salesforce is going to help you create that just unbelievable connection to your customer to help you grow your business. So when I reduce it down to that and I really think about those things, it's very easy to make large, bring large acquisitions that we've made into the company and envelop that into the brand, and also any new innovation that we've got coming up, because the vision of the company has always been the same. It's completely focused on customer success. It's completely focused on connecting customers to each other, to their ecosystem, to everything around them. And then you just kind of wrap and explode out the brand from that one simple thing.
I love that. And you talk about exploding the brand out too. And I think that your background as a filmmaker and bringing that promise to life, I mean, a Dreamforce attendee also, and I want to talk about that because talk about just a small brand touch point on right. The list. But the videos of those customer stories, I mean, I can see that promise. So how do you bring that to life when you are, I mean, because some of your most powerful marketing is really telling your customers' stories also.
Right. I mean, I think that it's a huge part of the core of our brand, that it's our customers telling that story. And I think when you look at, or you come into the Salesforce brand, you're in the ecosystem, you're at one of our events, it looks really, really simple, and it's very fluid, and it's almost like there's nothing to it. And I think that is the magic of the team that's behind all of that, and making sure that that looks and feels and just is so incredibly approachable and emotional. Excuse me. And that has been the secret sauce of Salesforce throughout the 17-year history. And when I came in 6 years ago, I saw something just absolutely magical. I'd been hired through my entire career at either jobs or as a contractor, as a filmmaker, to come in and kind of create that kind of aura that would elicit things of this nature, that would bring like a customer love situation into marketing. When I arrived at Salesforce and I looked inside, I saw something absolutely magical. This company already had all of this. They had unbelievable customers that were just in love with the company. They had changed their whole lives by being able to take Salesforce and do something amazing with it, or change their careers from a job that they had that was, you know, not taking them somewhere, and becoming Salesforce administrators and building companies from within, just using the platform to take companies to new places. And so these stories were just all over the place. But they weren't being told in the way that I thought was really going to get out of the building. They were trapped in our events. They were trapped in the building. We weren't really kind of sending them out there in a way where so many people could see them. There were just these evangelists, at that time, 3,000 evangelists inside Salesforce that would have sales calls, or they'd go to events and they'd stand up and they'd tell these stories every time. They'd have to repeat them while they're standing. And those were amazing events, and it's really what built us. But I knew at that point I had to change everything that was going on, the way those stories were being told, and create them in a way that somebody could just push a button anywhere in the world and start to see them. And it really took a while, because you know, while I saw that, and it was kind of, you can look at it now and see how quite easy that is. At that time, I had to change the whole way people were thinking about this, that we could talk this way, that we can make films this way, that these stories and customers would be able to go on film and do it this way. So it took about a year and a half for me to kind of talk and convince people about this, to the point where I was either going to give up or just go out and make the first one so people could see what was going on. And that's what I did. I went out, made the first one. I remember, I'll never forget the day I went in and pushed the play button for Mark Benioff on this first customer film. And he looked at it, to his credit, he goes, "Is this what you've been trying to tell me for since you came here?" And I go, "Yes." He goes, "Well, this is unbelievable. You've changed my entire scope of how I think we could speak. You've changed the way I look at the company. I'll never look at it the same again." And then he said, he goes, "Well, you know, you're also the worst salesman in the world, and I'm going to teach you how to sell. And you teach me how to do this, and I'm going to teach you how to sell," which was really funny. It was just his way of saying, "Hey, I wasn't listening to you for a year and a half, because I think I'm a pretty good salesman." But
well, it's an interesting time in digital marketing tool with the prevalence of digital tools like video. And you know, you look at, you know, I think your background has to, in ways that being a filmmaker and you know, a chief creative officer might not have before. But I think the storytelling tools we have today are a perfect fit.
Look, we're all storytellers, and I think story has never been more important than it is today, because there are so many things trying to grab your attention. And really, at the core, all of this digital technology, everything you could buy in the world, and if you look at the landscape of all of the software you can buy in this now marketing technology landscape, it's massive. And all of them can give you a little shortcut here or there, but nothing will ever replace a well-crafted story. Everything that's delivered to somebody in any way needs to have that, needs to have the empathy, needs to have that conflict. It needs to have all the key structural things we know about telling stories. They've got to be authentic. They've got to be honest. They've got to be real. They've got to touch your heart. They've got to make you laugh. They've got to be absolutely inspiring for you to engage with the brand. And on the other side, the brand has to be equally authentic and real and honest to back up everything that's being said. And when you look at millennials today and this new generation, they are just unbelievable in how they attach themselves to brands quite quickly that do this. And if you look at all the brands that millennials are attached to, they're the ones that are talking about how sustainable their whole company is, where they source all their materials from. They have an open discussion inside their brand, in a community. They've built communities where they're constantly being open and honest about everything they're doing. And the millennials are in there, and they're helping to shape these brands through the community. And then that brand echoes back through the work and comes back out into the culture, so that the culture of the company, the culture of the advertising, and the culture of the customers all unite in this simple single thread that is just something you can't really see or feel in terms of advertising, but you can totally see or feel if you go and connect with that brand and see the customers in action, like you would at Dreamforce. Dreamforce is that perfect example of what I just talked about.
Well, I'm thinking two things. First, you talked about we're all storytellers, and I think that's where, you know, story is one of those concepts that is kind of used and abused, and that not everyone always understands concretely.
Right.
But what you just walked through of everything that you deliver, I think we have bad, you know, childhood imagery of, you know, sitting on the edge of the bed, you know, reading a story to a kid, like a literal story, as opposed to every, like you said, everything that we're delivering. And that can be something very small. It can be something in an email, in a, you know, software interface, to a great, big, huge event that has to have those story elements. So when you have something that is a great, big, massive brand touch point like Dreamforce, you know, I think that that's, you know, a textbook example of what's it like to walk into a brand. And, you know, everybody talks about, you know, the Apple stores is obviously a great example. Right. But I think Dreamforce also. But if you're talking to another business that wants to employ a similar concept, where do you start? Where do you, you know, when it can be everything three-dimensionally,
right?
Where do you begin?
I think you have to really be honest with yourself about, first, where are you? Where are you at this exact moment? And getting really, really honest about that. To really go out and listen, you have to really talk to your best customers, and you have to talk to customers that have left you. And you have to understand both of them. And you really got to dig into both sides of that. You really need to know where you are. And you need to then ask yourselves a very simple question of why. Why are you in business? Why are you on this planet? Why are you here? Because the why part of it is really the magic. You know, if you're just in business to make a profit, if you're just in business to do a very superficial materialistic thing, you're not going to be in business very long. Not today. But if you're in business for a why that is greater than the business itself, that is going to take all of your ecosystem to another place, that you're in business for something much bigger, then you have a chance today to really win the hearts and minds of a customer base. And I think this is so important to start with, where are you and why are you? And then you can start to craft outside of there, because you have to build marketing from the inside out today. Your employees must be really completely engaged in your story, in your why, and that has to come from them. You can no longer put a marketing campaign out into the world where your employees see it for the first time when they're driving their car and they see a billboard and there's a catchphrase and they're like, oh, that's interesting. And they don't even know what that is or what that means. It really has to come from inside the company. You've got to try and create a movement. And that movement starts small. It's the inside of the company, because your evangelists, your best advertising tool, your first best advertising tool are your own people. They all have to go out every day, and they've got to be able to have that elevator pitch and that brand idea and that passion and that heart, because every time they talk about it, they bring more and more people into it. As people come in and experience that is absolutely true, now you've got an opportunity for great success. And that's really, to me, how it all starts. And I think a lot of people skip those steps, and they go right to tactics or execution or hire an agency. And we need to do this, and we need to do that. That is something that really worked many, many years ago. And it was a fantastic way to do something, to reverse engineer where you want to be by through the work, because it was really easy to reach people. But today, that's just not going to work anymore. And it's just not.
Well, I think too, it's easy to say with something like Dreamforce, like you said, rushing to the tactics and saying, hey, you know, get the banners and screens like Salesforce. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And it's really what's on them, and it gets back to the stories in them, and bringing those to life and exploding them throughout all of that. And it's not easy checklist stuff.
No, it's not. Dreamforce is a miracle in many ways. I mean, no one back on at the first Dreamforce could ever imagine, when this few hundred people, maybe it was, I don't know, 50 to 500 people in a hotel here in San Francisco, no one could ever imagine that it would become what it is today. And this is pure focus of listening. Now, Dreamforce is a great example of a company saying they're going to do something and sticking with it. And it basically comes down to this. You know, very early on, we said, we are going to build this tool to help you, and we want you to help us help you make it better. So we opened up a community, and people went in and said, we like this about this, we don't like this about this. The top 10 things that the community voted on went to the top of the list, and this is what we would always work on. We'd work on those things, and then we would report back through that through Dreamforce or the mechanisms where we get back together and go, you asked for these changes and here they are. And here's the new release. We have these three releases coming out a year and here they come. And then people wanted to come and get together to learn how to use this better. And then they would have more critiques. And this just kept going on and on. And this summer we're going to have our 50th release. And it is incredible that that just simple little thing is what really is at the heart and soul of what Dreamforce is, what the Salesforce product is, and what's become all of these evangelists talking about coming into this community now. And grabbing Salesforce to help them succeed in those three dimensions of their life, whether it's personal, how they get their own career going, their business, or doing something bigger together. Because Dreamforce is a week of volunteering as well. Every day there's another volunteering thing happening there where we're helping different nonprofits do some amazing things. So it's always a bigger deal at Dreamforce than just coming to learn, but it is about learning. It's always a bigger deal than coming and sharing success, but it is also about sharing success. And it's a bigger deal because we're coming all together to do something bigger than everybody could be on their own. And it's just a platform for unbelievable success. And that's why you don't see a lot of our ads. We don't do a lot of traditional marketing in the sense that you would be driving around or you'd watch TV and you'd see Salesforce. You know, we're in the news a lot through a PR mechanism of things that we're doing. Our customers are always evangelizing for us. And we literally just laser target everybody we can in any city, and we bring them to an event, and then we come in and we offer them an experience. And then we have breakout sessions where they can go and learn. And then we have forums for them to share their success as well. And then we just keep this going and going and going all over the world and sharing those stories, because through story is how this keeps spreading. One great success story explodes out into other people wanting to do the same thing. And this is another thing we never do, is negative advertising in any way. We could do a lot of problem solution stuff, but we put out one message and it elicits two very different responses. And I think this is an unbelievable insight that we had, in that will you come to Dreamforce or any of our events, or you're engaged with us in any way, and you are going to see a company, any company, any of our customers that are doing amazing things and how they did it by implementing Salesforce. People that come onto there that are customers that come into that space are like, oh, this is great. We've joined the right place. They look all around them and it's a sea of success all over the walls in the films. A prospect enters that realm or enters our website or comes to an event in any way that doesn't have Salesforce, and they get a different response. They're immediately stressed out. They're surrounded by all this success, and they're like, we are so far behind. We're not doing any of this. We're nowhere near this. And they get incredibly stressed out, which makes them want to talk to our sales organization and our leaders even faster than the customers do who want to upgrade or learn to do new things. And so that is an amazing insight that we had watching that go down. Why people were wanting to talk to us after these events. And it was because they were just, wow, so far behind after seeing what everyone was doing.
Well, and that's an interesting approach too, because I think some would say, okay, we have to have this other layer of messaging for those prospect types.
Right.
And given your size, given your scope, I think it would be easy to assume that, but that you are able to, you know, draw them in and still serve both and produce a different and effective reaction. I mean, the community that is up to speed is served well and is more connected, and those others are kind of drawn in by the gravity and compelled to do more.
It's really been something that is, I think more people should think about, rather than taking that negative route, you know, just really sharing that success and having that be a driver for the right reasons into your business. And that's what, you know, but that's at the core of our brand as well. It's not something that, it's something that we saw. It wasn't something that we manipulated. It was happening. And then we just kept going with it. and knowing that it's happening. It wasn't something that was manipulated to happen. And I think that's that's true to the brand as well.
So when you talk about true to the brand, you know, one thing I alluded to earlier in the other kind of track of the growth that I think many companies, especially ones of the Salesforce size and scope, when do you find yourself, I don't know if over-branded is the right word, but with child brands, and, you know, it's easy to get kind of, you know, overbaked on kind of on all of the different levels of the brand. And I feel from an outsider's standpoint, I could be wrong or I could just be noticing something, but it feels a lot more streamlined and uniform in recent years than perhaps it was long ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, I think in the past, even just coming in, there were a lot of, you know, a lot of groups had their own thing. They kind of worked more silo-ish. They were kind of going out with their own message at any given time. That wasn't kind of, there wasn't kind of a cross-branded thing all over everything. And then they would all show up to an event, put their stuff up, and they try to tie it together with some brand cohesion at an event. And I think this is why they were searching for someone like me even at that time. They knew that they had to take that next step. Again, this is a startup that exploded.
Yeah.
And then this happens to a lot of companies. If they don't have that mechanism set up from day one, at some point they're going to have to contain it. You know, a lot of startups start up and they go, you know, they're just hoping to make it their first year, you know? And then a lot of these just explode. And then they have to catch up to put processes and systems and people in place to make things work. And so over time, and it's taken a long time, and I have a 24-hour plan and I have a 5-year plan. And my five-year plan was to bring all this together, to speak with one voice, to get as close together as we could, to get into the core, and then to let things still be free. You don't want to put a lid on something, because this company, the culture of this company, is just about innovation in many ways. And so you don't want to stop the independent voices from trying and doing something. You just want to course correct if something's completely off brand or someone's in a place where, oh, we don't talk that way. That's not us. And so, and everything else, you just kind of want to bring in with some brand guidelines. You want to keep that loose. You want to allow people to fly. And then you got to try things. And then as you acquire new companies and they come in, you've got to kind of see what you can do to not really stall their growth or their passion or the culture of their particular thing, but show them the positive benefits of plugging into everything here. And so you got to be really careful about how you do that. And sometimes you could wait too long. Sometimes you could move too fast. But in the end, plugging in to the mother brand is the fastest and best way for success for in any company when you're making acquisitions.
Well, I love that, and I think it makes sense. The whole is more than the sum of its parts. I love the concept of the mother brand. I think that where we struggle is that I think out there at other companies, in other organizations, and where people are coming from, there's been a lot of bad things done in the name of, you know, the air quote brand police.
Right.
That they're going to do exactly what you said you were out to not do, of they're going to stifle innovation. They're going to say, we don't do this. All of the don'ts instead of the do's.
Right. You've got to be really careful. You have to be extraordinarily patient. And you have to, you know, from my perspective, I just gave a whole talk last week about my personal brand. And I was trying to teach people, you know, what is the perception of you inside of a building? How are you entering a room? What do people think of you? And how are you going to lead in today's day and age? And my number one value is trust. I have to know that everyone trusts me when I enter a room. You know, there's a lot of things I do. There's a lot of things people trust me with, very big things. They've got to trust me with that. If that trust isn't there, I'm not going to be able to succeed for the company. And I won't be able to help that group. But if I could build great trust with a leader that has a message that they need to get out, then I'll have an opportunity to really do that in the best way possible for them. Otherwise, they're going to say, I'm going to go out and get my own little agency and do this. And then that could break them off and set them back a while if they don't do that right. So I have to build that trust. And trust is so huge if you're in a position like mine in any company.
Yeah, because I think by default, you know, until you said that, it sounds bad, but I think people are guarded around the brand people when they come around.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, sometimes you have to deliver some bad news
right
to somebody who thinks they've done something amazingly well. And you're like, this is not right. It's not good. Your strategy doesn't live up to what you just put out. And it's really, really difficult. And, you know, it really is. And I think that's the job. It's also very subjective at times. It's very subjective. What I'm looking at sometimes, it comes down to me saying, I like this, not that. That is the simplest state of being a creative director. And to make that choice and be able to have the power to make that choice. The key on my side, on the back end, is I must explain intellectually why. I can't just say, I like this, but I don't like that. And this, what you did, is not on brand. I must be intellectual about why. And I have to get to the why. And I think that is the gift of all of us that worked through the last couple decades, through traditional marketing, through everything, to be in this place today. And to sit with a whole new generation of people to say, this is why. This is better than that. Let me tell you why. Because we're going to go all the way down to the core of the brand. And it's not just an opinion of, oh, because I say so. And so that is really what I spend a lot of time doing when I'm talking to people. And sometimes there's still a disagreement that doesn't matter to a group. And you have to kind of let that go. And you have to have a lot of patience and a lot of trust. And you have to wait. But more times than not, 9 times out of 10, if you take your opinion and then you back it up all the way down to the why, to the point where we started this conversation, most people's eyes light up and they see things in a new way. And then you can inspire them to leave the room and come back with something better than they ever thought that they could do before hearing that. And that's really what we do as creative leaders, because we can't do everything, and nor should we. And we can't force our will on other people. All we can do is inspire, lead, and guide, and really get down to something so people understand where you're coming from. And if they buy into that and they believe that and they can attach that to the three dimensions of the brand that I talked about earlier, then they can really do some absolutely terrific work.
I love so many things you just said, and you talked about, you know, the key, and I think it's certainly something that many of us love, but it's also one of the hardest things about explaining or intellectualizing this very nebulous, abstract topic. I also teach branding at the University of Iowa here, and it's hard. It's hard in a way that the finance classes aren't. I mean, that's a different kind of hard that I certainly don't want to go grapple with. But it's not easy, because the onus is on us as creatives to get to the why, to get to the strategy behind all of this, and it's not always easy work.
It's not. It's really hard to do. And I think a lot of people are skipping it, right? You wanna find great insight. Insight is what creates great work. And all the power of branding comes to the person who is writing the brief. And I tell people this all the time, because, you know, we have in the creative world, someone will spend their entire life building a portfolio, going to art school, learning how to write, and they build this great portfolio. They have a voice in their work, and they're going, and they have a right to take and dissect a brief and go. There's a lot of people that don't do that, but still think they're creative and they want to do it. And to them, it's kind of fun. But to a creative professional, this is their life. This is their livelihood. This is where they spend all of their time getting to a place. To get into an interview with me, for me to hire, you've got to be exceptional. And then on the other side, there's people that are just in the building that just want to have fun, do stuff. They think it's fun to make it. And so that is something you also have to deal with as a creative leader. But I also tell those people, I go, if you really want to have the most power in this process, write the brief. Then you will own the work. You'll be able to choose whether it's on strategy, and you will be able to guide the team and thrill them and inspire them. And so that is really the key to anyone who wants to see great work. Own the brief and then let go of the brief. Let it go. Hand it over and let that team take off. On the way back, they're the judge because they wrote great insight. Nothing in the world a creative person respects more than picking up a brief and being thrilled by some insight they had never seen before, written in a way that is absolutely just moving them, so that their mind explodes at the time of reading the brief. All the best briefs in the world, I almost immediately have ideas that end up being the final idea because the brief has taken me there. And so I think that is really the power, and that is what people are skipping. Where's the insight coming from? Did we really get out into the market and listen to the audience, good and bad, to find what is it that they really are either struggling with, or this new white space, this new opportunity that nobody even thought of? What is that opportunity? Let's define it, and let's chart a course with this great insight of how we're going to let people know this thing they never even thought they wanted, they want to buy now. And so those are the two kind of master elements, the problem or the opportunity that you need to solve in the brief. And it's hard work. It's as hard as coming up with the idea off the brief. But that is being skipped more and more and more and more and more. And when someone skips that part, it's generally going to create very mediocre work, if not work that nobody even cares to engage with or sees, because there's really nothing there. It's just another one of those banner ads that we skip in the internet that we retargeted with, or a story that within 20 seconds you're already bored watching the film and you're clicking off. That's most of the things out there. The good news to anyone who does what I just said people skip is that you have a high probability of success if you do that. You can win just by doing that one extra step, which I agree is tough to do, but that is the muscle everybody needs to build. It's the traditional muscle of yesteryear. It's everything that we did in a traditional way many, many, many years ago that is still is valid, if not more valid today, because there's so many things screaming for our attention. And the insight is what is the difference between success and failure today.
Couldn't have picked a better note to end on, and we've almost come full circle too with the easy stuff to grab onto is the tactics, but we have to do our homework. So as we start to wrap, John, what is a brand that has made you smile recently? Not right. One of those banner ads that you were retargeted.
I'm going to go down to something super small. There's a little company here in San Francisco. I don't think there's more than 20 to 30 people there. It's called Social Print Studio. And basically you go from your iPhone, they have an app, you could do this online too, and you can upload pictures from your Instagram account or your camera roll, and you could build a photograph that comes to you framed, you could build books, you could mugs, magnets, all kinds of stuff. Incredibly elegant and classy. But there's something this team's doing that I think the greatest marketers of the world aren't even doing. And it's what they send you when they send you their thing in the mail. They just send you this unbelievable appreciation, and you can tell how honest they are, that they want to do the right thing. And you're just filled with this unbelievable feeling after you open up and get this thing that you're getting. Now, mostly what I'm doing is giving my wife a present. I take pictures of my kids. If you look at my Instagram account, that's all it is. It's my family. My number one priority in life is to be a great father. And those kids mean everything to me. And what I want to do is never forget that. So I use this little company to print these books for my wife, and I give her one like every month. But it's just amazing. I open it up. First of all, something I love. It's my children. But it's just packaged right. And there's always a beautiful note that comes with it from the company. And they send great emails and customer service. They're always asking for input. Every time I write back to them, they write back to me and thank me. I mean, they just have it down. There's like 30 people there maybe, and they've got it down. And every time I interact with them, I smile. And I just feel so good about what they're doing. And I just wish that every company in the world acted like this. You know, every company did customer service this way and delivered a product this way, that you opened it and you just saw the love being put into it by a company, and they're always trying to be better. Better, 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 never best. I think that is kind of what encapsulates great companies. They just keep trying to be better. There's no finish line. There's no ending. It is a constant 360-degree circle with your customers to be better, to always look at yourself, and to create customer service in a way that you want to be treated. And I think that is what makes great companies today.
Awesome. Well, I will have to check out Social Print, because your Instagram feed is a lot like mine. So to know me is to follow me on Instagram. Lots of pics of my kids there as well. So this sounds like a useful tool that I need in my life, and one that is a good brand too.
Excellent.
So, provided that in our show notes here, we're going to link up to the obvious destination of Salesforce, where else would you send people to learn more about who you are and what you do?
You could follow me on Twitter at Zissimos, Z-I-S-S-I-M-O-S. That's the best place to kind of interact with me and see what's on my mind and what I'm thinking about. And that's probably it.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that. John, thank you for being on brand with us.
My pleasure. It has been a pleasure speaking to you.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community, and I want to give a special shout out to a friend, colleague of mine, who is my reason for connecting with Salesforce oh so long ago, and that is Mike Gerholt, who actually works at Salesforce now as an admin evangelist, and we're friends and have always stayed in touch and kept stayed a part of each other's communities. So in talking so much about Salesforce, I have to think about the big Salesforce evangelist that I know. And a reminder, if you heard something that you liked on this episode or another, if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can find links to everything that we talked about over at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. And the podcast is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Learn more at getscrappybook.com. And finally, it's also brought to you by the Social Brand Forum. This premier digital marketing experience takes place September 22nd and 23rd in beautiful Iowa City, Iowa. Learn more from experts like Jay Baer, Joe Polizzi, Ginny Dietrich, right here in the heart of the heartland. Listeners get the best rate when they register using promo code ONBRAND at socialbrandforum.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe. This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.